Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
A Dear Media original podcast.
Yo, what is up? And welcome to Wine Face, where we're breaking down everything the experts know about wine in a fun, digestible, and accessible way, because wine is for enjoying and wine is for everyone. I'm your host, Helen Johannesson from Helen's Wines in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Today, we're just going to crack open that egg of what is a vintage when you're talking about wine. I think so many times, I'll be with a friend, I'll be talking to a coworker who's not on my wine team, or be in a restaurant and someone will be like, "Oh, what vintage is that? Or have you had this vintage?" And people are like, "Stop, wait, I don't know what you're talking about. I've talked to customers about it." So I felt the need to rewind the tape and just be like, "Hey, what's a vintage?" And the most simple way to think about it is a vintage is a year. So every year is a different vintage, 2022, 2023. And in like a really base language way, it's the process of picking grapes and making a finished product that is wine. But I like to think of it as a vintage is referring to the growing cycle of a specific year. That's really, to me, what is the most important thing when you're talking about a vintage to vintage comparison for specific wines, especially from certain areas. So it's the growing cycle of a specific year when the grapes are grown and then ultimately they're picked and vinified into wine. So there we have it, y'all. That's it. Thank you for listening to my podcast. That's a vintage. No, I'm just fucking with you. Okay. So let's unpack this a little bit, because there's a few important key factors to this. As I said, the vintage has to do with like the growing cycle, and why that's important when you jump into my somm brain. Like, let's magic school bus this for a moment. Get in the bus. I'm going to put you in my ear canal and you're going to be in my brain. But basically, when I think about buying wine from certain regions, just like regions like Burgundy or Barolo or Tuscany, regions where there's very famous vineyards and very expensive wines are made there, I am very interested in how hot was it? How cold was it? Did it rain a lot? Was there frost? And when was the frost? Because, you know, there's a thing called bud break, and bud break is literally what it sounds like. It's like those little grape buds are breaking through. It's like, okay, a vineyard goes from looking like a bunch of sticks to then you have bud break. And it's like first signs of spring coming through. And that is the first, you know, initial growth of like, I'm coming out to make some grapes. And bud break, if you have frost, after a certain point in the growing cycle, you can risk losing your entire crop before the grapes have even grown to any close type of like fruition. So it is very touch and go. And there's lots of measures that are employed in vineyards. Like they will light bonfires in between the vines. You know, it's illegal to cover the vines to protect them in that way in most winemaking regions. And it's just like, kind of like, what, how would you do that logistically? Like put up a tennis bubble? Like, no, that shit takes engineering and time. So people burn fires to create heat amongst the rows. So this is what we're talking about when I'm thinking about how was this vintage in this area. Heat and also fire is now a very big deal. Here in California, we do deal with some of our own issues, you know, the first one being the most obvious, which is wildfires, which, you know, have and have not come very close and have decimated very well-known winemaking regions, Napa, Sonoma, like places where you just would never think wildfire could get to. You get heartbroken. And a lot of times what happens is it's not even like, yeah, some vineyards might burn, but there's a thing called smoke taint. And so smoke taint is if you're like downwind or your grapes just get literally engulfed in smoke. So maybe nothing burns, but like they are going to be affected by them just existing in the smoke. And I don't think it's fair to say that this in years of a wildfire near or in winemaking regions, that there's going to be like categorical smoke taint. It has to be in very close proximity to the fire. And I've had some of these wines that have smoke taint. And I think what the winemakers have done in those cases is they've taken kind of a strange situation that they haven't had to face before, and they don't know how well the wine will age, and they've made the best possible wine that they can. I know Ashanta's done really cool stuff. My friend Riley O'Neill has done really cool stuff. There's a lot of people, but in other cases, some winemakers have felt that the grapes are unusable. And then other people have opted to blend those grapes in with other grapes that didn't have smoke taint. So, you know, these decisions that winemakers have to make based on things totally out of their control because of weather or situations having to do with the climate are pretty, pretty wild. So if you're going to go out into the world now and think more about vintages and say you're drinking more California wine and you have sort of in your mind, okay, there was fires this year and this year and this year. And I mean, let's face it, there's fires every year. It doesn't necessarily mean that like, oh, the 2020 vintage of any California wine is bad because there were fires. No, it really is about more specific, very small pockets of vineyards and its specific producers. I would say places that get decimated, it's usually more about weather. So there is weather events that could happen in certain areas of France that will wipe out 80% of a winemaker's crop. And then, you know, that's what has happened in 2020 and 2021 vintages in Burgundy. That's why there's going to be very little white Burgundy for the next few years post this 2020 vintage, kind of the last one. 21 and 22, really, really not a lot of crops. So the prices are going to go up because the yield is much lower because of weather events in those vintages. Now, that wouldn't mean that the vintage doesn't taste amazing or that it's not a good vintage, but it's not good because the winemaker is going to make way less money and they have to make up that difference by raising the cost of their product. One thing a lot of winemakers do, they kind of have a rainy day fund for situations like that. So if they have a bad vintage, they have a back cellar that they'll go into and release some of their older wines to make up some of the lost revenue. So, you know, it's really, you're at the whim of nature in a lot of these cases. And it's kind of amazing that so much awesome wine gets made, given especially now how sort of unpredictable our planet is becoming. But obviously in California and in Washington State and in Oregon, there have been issues with fire, but Australia has just been like decimated. And then parts of France, it's just the heat is so crazy, but it's also these weather extremes. So these are all factors when we're thinking about the vintage of a wine when it comes to its growing cycle. Hail is also incredibly dangerous when you think about a delicate vine, especially if it happens, you know, in the summer, spring, summer, when there's a full canopy of leaves and there's grapes. Yo, you get hail and like those plants get decimated. It's like, pow, pow, pow. It's like paintball. It's like, I don't know if you've seen Sing 2 when Miss Crawley goes to Clay Calloway's to try and get him to come perform. And then she gets attacked by a paintball gun. It's kind of like that hail on grapes. Now, that was a deep cut mom reference, but Sing 2, decent cartoon. I would say pretty decent. Okay, so back to vintages. Why do we do it? The who, the why, the what, the where, the when. So let's go to the why. And it might seem obvious when I start talking about, like, when you think about how was the weather, you would obviously want to then put the vintage on the label. And this has been true basically since the beginning of time. The oldest recorded quote unquote vintage of wine was 8,000 years ago. And I don't know if they actually had a specific label. There's no etchings and there's no actual evidence that there were markings on the clay. And this was, I think, in northern Iran or near Georgia, but not the state, the country. And it's true that they were like storing and preserving and like wine was being recognized, but to the extent of by the maker and by the year is unclear. But we do know that the oldest quote unquote label of wine. So if we're thinking about how would we record vintage, it is directly correlated to labels on wine and wine bottles. And the oldest one comes from around 1550 BC, and it was in the forms of etchings and some papyrus drawings, I believe, that was in Egypt. I think actually King Tutankhamun at the Valley of the Kings, when they unearthed his tomb, they found like these jars, like, and they were labeled. I mean, how crazy is that? And apparently Tutankhamun was keen on the red wine, but I digress. So it was pretty sophisticated in ancient Egypt. It was denoting year, the type of the wine, and the maker. Obviously, it's not the same as the way we label wine today, but, you know, they were saying things like year one or year five. Now, we don't know what that's based on, but, and it, you know, from this area, valley of this amazing name in Egyptian that I will not try and say, and then post that by the farmer Vintner Ka. Like, these are, you know, the way they were labeling stuff. Anyway, it was already very sophisticated. So as you can see, why I want to talk about this is not to be snobby, but vintage is really important when it comes to wine. It doesn't have to totally lead your buying experience or drinking experience, but it is important for your education because, yo, if it's been important since ancient Egypt and Tutankhamun had the vintage wine by his side, we all got to know why. Let's fast forward. Ancient Egypt, 500 BC. They found a tablet that was created to talk about the distribution of wine based on social class. This also had different years listed on it, who made it, and what type of wine was in it. So this is also important because I do think different vintages of wine, depending on the bottle of wine, do automatically create some fissures in when you're talking about wine and class, social class, I mean. We could really do a whole episode on that, but maybe it's like, what has it been historically and what do we want it to be? How we fast forward to now, where you could pick up any bottle and it automatically has a vintage on it, is the Industrial Revolution in the 18th century brought about wine bottles. We talked about this on the history of champagne a bit. Prior to that, wine was stored in barrels and you'd like bring your old yield pitcher to the barrel and like fill it up. So no one was writing vintages then. The first paper labels were apparently created in Germany around the end of the 18th century. And then mass produced labels were also from Germany starting in the 19th century. And all of these then started to clearly print vintages on bottles of wine. What makes a good wine vintage, though, I think is where you want to start. So today we're really lucky because we have all this information on a bottle of wine, but we don't always know what it means. And I think about 20 years ago, maybe more, no, probably 30 years ago, there's a guy named Robert Parker who was brought in. I don't need to get into the history of Robert Parker, but he's the guy who kind of made wine scores. He would drink wines and rate them using his Parker's point system. And I think this is one element of what really started to, in a broader sense, in a more global sense, have people start thinking about vintages and good vintages versus bad vintages and when to buy versus not. Because at the end of the day, wine is a consumer product. And for some people, especially collectors, they're looking at this very much as an investment. So you would only really want to buy certain expensive wines in a very good year. I am not a vintage classist, though. I will buy producer wines that I support year after year after year, even if they have a hard vintage or not, because I believe that they are amazing winemakers no matter what. Hand over fist, they are dealt fire or freezing flames or whatever the fuck it is, they are going to crush it and slay it out of the box. So a great vintage is literally like idyllic amounts of everything being perfect with the weather. It's like warm in the right spots and cools down in the right spots. And like those winds are just shifting and there's no major disease and there's no crazy humidity and there's no flare-ups and there's no hail. So a good vintage is when the grape can reach its ultimate perfect ripeness that the winemaker thinks it should be before it gets picked. And that is really what determines a good vintage, is the farming and the growing. You know, you could have the most beautiful fruit and a winemaker who doesn't know what they're doing, and they could totally fuck up the wine from that vintage. It really is like you need to have both. Wine is made in two stages. It's grown, and that's stage one, and is equally as important as stage two, which is when it is taken down to the cellar and turned into wine. A bad vintage, I mentioned it before, usually has to do with a weather phenomenon or if a lot of the crop is depleted. But those are usually the issues when it comes to a quote unquote bad vintage. If you have famous places like Burgundy or Bordeaux or Tuscany or any place that has really, really valuable wines. And what I mean by that is famous vineyards where year after year, those bottles at auction will demand super crazy high prices. Every vintage is thought about as quote unquote good, bad, or okay. It's analyzed in those terms because that people believe is going to inform the ageability of that wine. So for a lot of wines, when it's first bottled or maybe it first lands on your doorstep, if it's of a certain caliber, meaning of a certain caliber of vineyard, it's not even really about what it tastes like right away. It's, does this have what it needs to stand the test of time and last 20 years, 30 years, 40 years? Because if it isn't a good vintage, the chances of it aging longer and getting more interesting and complex and changing are going to be far less. So when you think about vintages and you're interested in aging wine, the two things are intrinsically connected and can never be disconnected. Now, if you're just going to the store and like me, most of the wine I drink, it's not some baller shit I'm trying to age in a cellar. You know, I'm trying to drink wine that's approachable and it's affordable. And those wines, when you start drinking the same producer year after year, what's really cool is you'll drink the same bottle that they make. So let's take one of my favorite Beaujolais producers, Descombe, and they make a Gamay every year called the Kiki. And I'm sure some of my listeners have had the Kiki. We love the Kiki. The Kiki's great. But I have now had Kiki for about 8 years. And what's so cool is it tastes a little bit different every year. It's still made from Gamay. It's made by the same person, but the vintage is going to change it and vary it. And on a really good vintage, a lot of inexpensive wine can age longer than a bad vintage. Hot vintages right now in the wine world are Burgundy has had fantastic 2019 and 2020 vintage. But the scary thing is there's going to be like no wine after that. 2021 and 2022 for most of Burgundy was like totally decimated. So get it while you can, because there's going to be a drought when it comes to Burgundy. Some of the most famous like recent great vintages in the Northern Rhone, if you listen to Syrah season, is 2000 and 2011. But you can also go way back. One fun thing to do is to take your birth year and look up what wines are and aged into being amazing. So my birth year is 1982. That's right. I'm 40. And 1982, fantastic year in Bordeaux. You know, they're kind of over the hill, I think, now. But like for a long time, it was like you could age them, you could drink them, you could age them, you could drink them. Vintages, my goodness. So, so important. I think there's a question of why should you care? And on the day to day, I don't think it really matters. Like you don't need to run up in your shop and be like, is that 2019 or 2020? For a lot of wine, you should drink it based on the producer and the values that they espouse. But when you are out to eat and you are looking at wine lists, if you see the same wine but different vintages and one is more expensive, now you can kind of understand why. And it's most likely because one of those years was much better than the other. And the wine will taste that way. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. Now, there are some exceptions. Some of you may have noticed when you see wines from Champagne, so Champagne on a wine list, it won't always have a vintage. Sometimes it'll just say NV, which stands for non-vintage. And the reason that Champagne labels most of their wine non-vintage is because typically Champagnes are a blend of three different vintages. So it's all older wines. It's not like, you know, if you bought even a bottle of Veuve Clicquot right now, it's probably a blend of like 2017, 2018, and 2019. I don't know. I'm just making that up. I haven't called Veuve Clicquot and asked them what their vintages they're blending, but it would usually not be one specific vintage. And the reason is because Champagne is notoriously one of the hardest climates to grow grapes in a way that like makes delicious wine. So there's a real lack of consistency in their growing seasons. So their vintages are inconsistent, meaning that to get the best flavor, they need to blend different vintages together. Now, when you do see a year on a Champagne bottle, so 2012, 2014, these are going to be some of the years you're seeing because Champagne kind of has a longer aging period. That indicates that it was an exceptional growing year, and they would not want to blend those grapes with other vintages. They want to highlight that that year was special and it was absolutely fantastic. And those are the champagnes that you'll want to age. If you are into aging champagne, you want to save those because it has the most sort of fortitude to stand the test of time. I mean, a lot of people age stuff. Bourbon can be aged. Pappy Van Winkle, you know, whiskey is aged. Port also doesn't label their wines by vintage. They do non-vintage as well, or in exceptional years, do the same thing as Champagne and call out the specific vintage. But also, cool little side tip, Sherry, they do something called Solera. So it's sort of like the idea of Champagne where you're blending multiple vintages, but theirs is this whole system of stacking barrels in cellars and then blending new wine into old wine that could be up to over like 100, 200 years old of blending. It's just a constant trickle down. If you think a pyramid, it's like new wine on top and then it's not really trickling. I mean, they are manually blending, but it's really cool because there are some sherry houses that hypothetically some of the sherry could be from like 1790. You just wouldn't know. But in those senses, Solera has its own sort of idea of time. You know, it's like this insane blending of time. Vintages, ooh, so important, so key, so cruche. If you have any other questions about vintages, I would love to hear them. Please, you know, hit us up in the DMs or, you know, shoot me a message because I think it's just one of many ways that wine can be confusing. And I think if we like slowly chip away at this together, we will all have a better understanding of like, how do we want to engage with wine in the world? But yeah, if you want to check out what vintages I'm into, no, I'm just kidding. We have wine from all different vintages. The only thing we don't have is like a lot of crazy old wine because there's people who really specialize in that. It has to be cared for so specially. It's kind of like in an incubator, basically, to keep it alive, very temp sensitive. But this was, you know, just a toe dip into vintages. What year is it? 2023. So the grapes are in the ground. They're growing, right? Next step, bud break. Then there's going to be grapes on the vine, foliage, right? We're at the start of the 2023 vintage. And the vintage, even though kind of technically started in 2022-ish, after those grapes were picked off, vines kind of just chill for a while until they start their cycle again in a new year. So This is Vintages with Helen, and I'm really glad that you could join me. If you want to know more about what we're doing or what I'm up to, you can go to helenswines.com, where we have all kinds of new and exciting stuff. You can also join our wine club. It's at helenswines.com, and we have a lot of really cool member-only interactive things coming up in 2023. So definitely a really fun time to join the club. And you can follow me on Instagram at Helen's Wines. This was a pleasure and a total treat. All right, to a great vintage. Cheers. Wow.